Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Robert Campbell, publisher of the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter. You can find him online at realestatetiming.com. He's speaking to us from San Diego. Welcome back to the show.
Morning, Jim.
Bob, what's the state of the U.S. economy? People keep predicting recession, 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 yet is it in recession? Is there going to be a recession?
Well, there's eventually going to be a recession. I mean, that's everybody knows that. But it's just a matter of when. And the reason that there are good reasons why we haven't gone in recession, and I'd like to talk about that, because it's really critical, you know, I mean, that people know. And the biggest reason we haven't, so people say, like, we're going into recession. We're going into recession, you know, and all the key recession indicators that have been reliable for the last 50 years have all been flashing recessions on the way for the last year and a half, and we haven't had a recession. My favorite indicator, recession indicator, is the inverted yield curve, where you take the 10-year the yield on the 10-year Treasury note and subtract the yield on the 90-day Treasury bill, and when it goes negative, that means that a recession is coming. And the reason I follow it, over the last like 50, 60, 70 years or so, it has, every time that yield curve has gone inverted, meaning that short-term interest rates are greater than long-term interest rates, which is a highly abnormal situation. Normally it's the other way around. When that gets to a negative situation, a recession is imminent. It's looming. Well, that yield curve went negative about over a year and a half ago, and we still don't have a recession. And when the recession typically comes, because that's a leading indicator, when the recession typically comes is, you know, 12 to 15 months later, when the yield curve, gets out of an inverted state, and the 90-day T-bills are, again, less than the 10-year, which is the normal state, and then soon thereafter, a recession follows. Well, a year and a half ago or more, it went inverted. Still no recession. And interestingly, I mean, not only did it become more inverted than it ever has in history, but now that after it went full inverted, you know, to its maximum state, it started climbing back up again, signaling, okay, now it's on its way back up above the zero line. So as soon as it uninverts, that means a recession is almost a, you know, 95% chance. Interestingly, in the last 3 or 4 months, that yield curve has turned course and is starting to get worse again. In other words, becoming more inverted. So that's something that, in fact, I've never seen that happen. So what has to happen before we're gonna see a recession? And this is a history lesson, that yield curve has to get uninverted, and now that it's heading into a more negative situation again, that means that time is a long way off. We're not going to have a recession, therefore, in 2024. It's just not going to happen. Because the recessions occur after the yield curve becomes uninverted. And so we're not even close to that yet. And here's other reasons. Right now, the U.S. government is running $2 trillion budget deficits. $2 trillion. That's 25% of the U.S. economy is being run by government spending money that they're not taking in tax revenues. That's huge. That's as bad as it was during the World War II. So what that's doing, all that government spending with money they don't have is creating jobs. I mean, they may be baloney jobs, and if they're government jobs, you know, that's almost everybody knows that those jobs, you know, are not, you know, highly productive jobs. But that $2 trillion being pumped into the economy through a budget deficit is creating jobs. And so right now the unemployment rate is at 3.7%, 3.6%, something like that, near record lows. And it's stayed there for a long time because the government has been deficit spending from, you know, $2 to $3 trillion a year since the start of the 2000 COVID pandemic. And it's continuing. The pandemic, they first justified that kind of deficit spending, say, you know, that we got to save the U.S. economy. So we got to go into debt, you know, start handing out money to businesses so they stay alive and the whole country doesn't go broke. Okay? That situation doesn't occur anymore. That doesn't apply any longer. Yet we're still running $2 trillion deficits. And I won't get into all the reasons we're doing that, but I believe that we're going to continue running $2 trillion deficits or more for a long, long time. Because I know what's needed. The baby boomers, they need Medicare, they need Social Security, and the money just isn't coming in. And here is the other reasons that we're not going to have a recession in 2024. This is a presidential election year, guys. Presidential election year. And no president in the United States, no incumbent president in the United States since 1924 has ever been reelected with the economy in recession. Not once. So what the government is doing, and the Fed's going to accommodate, the Fed is going to pivot. The Fed is going to start lowering interest rates again, even though they shouldn't, because they're a political body, and to keep the U.S. economy out of recession. And so it looks to me very clearly next year, all the estimates are, the consensus is that we're going to have 7 rate cuts in 2024. Well, that doesn't lead to recession. It doesn't. I mean, that's stimulative. So now we have two forms of stimulus. You may recall during the 2007-2008 recession, what the government did and what the Fed did. They lowered interest rates to zero to get us out of there. Okay, that did the job. That got us out of there, eventually got us out of there. Well, what they're doing now, they're not only using, you know, monetary policy, which is controlling which direction interest rates go. Now they're using fiscal policy, which is government spending. So they're spending through the nose at $2 trillion plus per year in deficit and lowering interest rates at the same time, because all the politicians in office right now, they all want to be, they're up for re-election, they want to be re-elected. So they don't want the economy to get weak, because that could mean, you know, the end of their reign as a politician. Unemployment would go up. They don't want rising unemployment during a presidential election year. And interesting, so that's why there's going to be no recession in 2024. And if you look at past history, guys, you know when the recession's going to come? You know when all the bad news is going to come and we're going to pay for our sins? right after the election. 2025 is when everybody's going to, you know, find their come to Jesus moment. Admit, oh, we can't let the, you know, national debt, you know, continue to go up at you know, $1 trillion a year every 3 months. We can't do that. That's irresponsible. And then they'll try to hit the brakes, which they won't be able to do at this time, but they'll try. That's when we'll have a recession, and then we'll be out of the recession for the next next election cycle. That's what's going to happen.
Bob, how would you describe the state of real estate in the U.S.?
State of real estate in the U.S., right now, the on a year-over-year basis, housing prices are appreciating anywhere between 5 and 6%, let's say, on average, depending on which home price data provider you're looking at. Interestingly, though, that 5 or 6% year-over-year increase is contrasted with the downturn after the peak in mid-2022. So, in other words, it looks like it's going up, but you know, by a lot more than it has, because in many instances, it's like based on prices that are reported in the newspaper, which are often called nominal prices. You know, housing prices are anywhere 1 to 2 or 3% above the mid-2022 peak. However, if you adjust for inflation, which you have to do, housing prices nationally are down 3.7%, and in the state of California, they're down 14%. And the reason you have to adjust for inflation, guys, is this. Dollars are just no more than a symbol of wealth. They're just a symbol. What those dollars will buy in the form of goods and services is what they're really worth. And if you'd have sold your house, if you held on from the peak in mid 2022 in California real estate, the real estate that you still own right now, if you sold it today, it would buy 14% less in goods and services. And a lot of people don't like to address that, the ex-inflation factor, and I'm not sure exactly why. I think sometimes because it makes them feel poor, which would wake them up, in my standpoint, but that's the way it is. That's the way it is. You know, it's what those dollars would buy. You know, that's what counts. Like, once you adjust for inflation, and I'm just using the inflation numbers that are reported by the government, U.S. government. Everybody knows those are wildly inaccurate. Of course they are. Talk to a consumer. Talk to somebody that buys food. You know, talk to somebody that's out buying a new car. Talk to somebody that's out buying a house, you know, and say, oh, yeah, inflation's 3%. You know, that's total BS. Everybody knows it. But the government can get away with it. But nevertheless, that's what makes it so difficult to get ahead and stay ahead in life, because there's three factors I was taught at an early age. You have to get ahead of inflation, you have to get ahead of taxation, and you have to get ahead of changing market conditions. And I've met several very wealthy men in my life, and after they've worked their butts off, most of them in real estate and real estate development, and made themselves, you know, a lot of millions in order because of their success. Once they retired and sold everything, you know what they want? They want to make that. They want to turn like $10 million into $20 million. They want to take that $10 million and try to preserve its purchasing power over time. That's all they ask for. $10 million is a lot of money. You know, one, don't lose it, but two, you don't need $20 million. Just hopefully that if you do everything right at the end of your life or 10 years or whatever your time frame is, that $10 million that you accumulated once you sold your business would have bought $10 million worth of goods and services, will buy $10 million worth of goods and services, again, you know, relatively, you know, down the road. And that's a really hard thing to do. See, most people don't like to talk about this. They say, oh, that's negative thinking. You know what? That's life, guys. That's what life is. And I'm a kind of person that is always up for challenges. I don't look at this and say, oh, you know, I don't want to talk about it because it's negative. To me, it's a challenge that has to be met so that you have to do what you have to do, you know, in order to maintain the purchasing power of those dollars, especially after you get old and retire, so that you can stay retired and you don't have to work. And that's a lot harder nowadays than most people believe. So it's a magnificent challenge, everybody, but the risk is there. Those three things, and that's why I've always said in real estate, to me, the best way to make money in real estate and maintain, you know, a high, you know, increased, the same amount of purchasing power, if not increased purchasing power, is here's my favorite money-making strategy for real estate. Buy low, add value during the appreciation cycle, and then sell at or near the peak. Because buying low and selling high, that means when you sell high, during the appreciation cycle, housing is appreciating faster than the rate of inflation, which is good. On the downside, housing is depreciating at a greater rate than inflation. So you're getting hurt both ways. And then, you know, adding value, of course, is that's just the smart way to do it, guys. Smart way. That's the developer's mentality. You know, buy a lot, buy a vacant lot for $100,000. And this is what I used to do. You know, just use simple numbers. I put a $100,000 apartment house on it, 8 to 10 units, and I'd sell it as soon as I'm finished, 6 months later, for $300,000. And I could do that because I was the general contractor, I was the developer, and I was the supervisor. I could do two of those deals a year. And so that was back in the 80s. I'm not going to do that anymore because that's a full-time job. And I'd rather write an investment newsletter than do that. Money's not the most important thing in my life anymore. You know, it was when I had a family and growing up and, you know, all the kind of things, keeping up with the yuppie mentality and all that, doesn't matter to me anymore. I'm comfortable financially, and that's all that matters once you got your health. But that's what you do. You buy low, add value during the appreciation cycle, then sell at or near the top. That's the best and the most effective way to make money in real estate that beats inflation, beats taxation, and beats changing market conditions.
We'll have more with Robert Campbell right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Robert Campbell. Bob, are people still leaving California?
Absolutely. They're leaving California. California is the three states that are losing the most people on an annual basis are California, Illinois, and New York. Now, when we talk about numbers, of course, some people talk about numbers, like 400,000 people left California last year, and, you know, only 150 left Illinois. So that must mean, you know, it's almost three times greater. Not really. California's population is 40 million. Of course more people are going to be leaving. But the net outflow out of California has been steady for the last, you know, two or three or four, maybe even 5 years. And who's leaving? Two groups of people that I see based on my experience and my observation. Rich people. They're getting the hell out. For the socialist state of California just cleans them out of everything. And kids are leaving because you can, let's say that you're a 30-year-old that has some skills, you know, good skills that demands a good income in California. Let's say you can make, you know, $100,000 a year, just as an example. You could move to Texas or to or Arizona, which is the number one destination for Californians exiting the state. You could make that same amount of money, income, same job, $100,000 a year. The difference is the cost of living. In Texas, you could buy the same home you could in California for about 60% less money. In Arizona, the same. So what you do is you can own a home. You can, or maybe raise a family. But a kid earning $100,000 in, a household income of $100,000 in California, that's not going to buy you anything. It's not going to buy you anything near the coast. I mean, I don't know about Central California. I mean, maybe you could be in Bakersfield or Fresno or something. But I mean, I don't know about that area. But most people aren't going to go out there because it's primarily agricultural. But they're moving out of state so that they can upgrade their standard of living and lower the cost of living and try to make a go at it. Because the old American dream, like for my dad, once he came back from World War II, he was in the Marines, fought in the South Pacific, the American dream was to buy a house. And everybody could buy a house. Everybody. It wasn't hard. Now that American dream is, for the most part, dead. It really is. The median-priced home in California, or in my neck of the woods, let's say San Diego, the average is $950,000. That includes the areas near the coast and away from the coast. And there's a lot of places that you can buy inland that are about, 20 miles off the coast where you can still buy a house for like $500,000, 20 miles from the ocean, which is still a lot of money, more than the national average, but is that where most people want to live in sunny Southern California? No, they want to live on the beach. I mean, the area where I live, I mean, I'm a mile and a half from the beach, and I live right behind Del Mar, so I mean, I'm still a mile and a half away, inland. But single-family homes, the median price is over $2 million. $2 million. And I live in suburbia. I mean, is everybody running around in Rolls Royces and having Rolex watches? No. They're just all hardworking people that bought their home a long time ago. They couldn't afford it now at $2 million, myself included. But that's what it takes to break into this market in certain areas. Versus, so the median price in Texas and Arizona is somewhere around $500,000. So it's about one half the cost of a house, one half the cost in a similar location as it is in California. So anybody that wants to, or has a fire in their gut and wants to get ahead, get out of California. It's too hard to make it. Too hard. When I started out in real estate in San Diego, this was in the 1970s, as an investor, at one point, and I'm talking about, half a mile from the beach where I was investing in property. I owned 13 investment properties. 13. Now somebody couldn't even own one because of the cost. Because of the cost. And they were cheap properties. That's what I could afford, so that's what I bought. At one point, I owned 13. And so, I was gung-ho to get ahead in life, make some money, and be rich. I mean, that's every young man's dream. At least it used to be. And I was no different. But you couldn't even come close to that nowadays. Come close to that. When I graduated from UCLA in 1969, I could have come home to my hometown of Encinitas, which is right on the beach, and bought a home within half a mile of the beach for $65,000. I could have got a job for $12,500, had bought a house for $65,000. Because I was single, I could have bought a 2-year-old hot rod muscle car, like every 2 years or so, because I liked running around in fast cars, and the chicks liked it too. Now, if I was coming out of UCLA today, that same home that I could pay $65,000 for would cost $2.5 million. No, you could, nobody could afford that. Nobody. So that's how things have changed, guys. That's how things have changed. And how come housing has gone from $65,000 for that house to $2.5 million for that same house? Inflation. Most of it is inflation. Take inflation out of it, and that house would probably sell for, like, you know, maybe double. Maybe double. Not 25 times as much. So it's all based on inflation, guys. And that's one of the ways everybody thinks they're like, you know, hey, I'm rich. I'm making, you know, I'm making this, or I have, you know, have this. I'm making X amount of dollars. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking, I would have been able to get a job making $12,000 a year. $12,000. And bought a house near the beach. Those days are long gone, guys. So it's just a whole different world we live in now. So now you got to be really, there's no market timing involved with that. None. But now you got to include market timing, you got to add value, you got to play all your cards right to do well nowadays. And most people don't have the skills or the ability to do that. But that's what you got to do.
Bob, what's your picture on gold?
My picture on gold has been unchanged for the last 5 years. I think it's going to turn into the premier asset of the world, because I think governments, not only the U.S., but Europe, Argentina, by the way, guys, is currently running a 200% annual rate of inflation. 200%. You know what it was like 2.5 years ago? 40. That's how things can jack up. So I think eventually, somehow, these political spenders, these governments, are going to have to be reined in somehow to put some substance behind the fiat currency. And I've studied this for a long, long time. The easiest way is to reprice gold and back the U.S. dollar, back all that debt. We currently owe $34 trillion. $34 trillion. Prior to the pandemic, which was 2020, what are we talking about? 4 years ago, it was $10 trillion less. That's how fast the national debt is accelerating right now. And everybody knows there's no way to pay that off. If you took every man, woman, and baby in the United States, all 330 million of us, and divided the national debt by that, I think we all owe, I'm just getting, what, $100,000? $100,000. Nobody can pay that. Nobody can even pay a $20,000 credit card bill or a student loan anymore. And we're talking babies. So if you're a mom and dad with two young kids, you owe $400,000. And that number may be, I'm sure it's wrong, but maybe it's more. It's not less. But that's how ridiculous it is. So where are you going to get the money? You're going to pay the debt servicing to pay that off. You're going to print more money. And that's what happens at the end. That's what happens at the end. We've turned very socialistic. Margaret Thatcher, who was the Prime Minister of England sometime back and was a very tough and smart lady, she said that when does socialism end? When you run out of other people's money. But you know, I've been thinking about that. That's not true, guys. Because socialism never ends because they can print more money. They can keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into debt until the whole friggin' thing just explodes. So it's not like you run out of taxpayer money. The taxpayers aren't covering any of this budget deficit. I mean, that if they were, it wouldn't be a deficit. And here's the reason it's such a huge deficit and going to be so difficult / near impossible to bring down. 77% of the money spent by the U.S. that the U.S. government brings in is mandatory spending. It's Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. 77%. That can't be touched, guys. Cannot be touched. You all of a sudden start saying, okay, nobody has free medical care anymore. I mean, everybody has to pay their own way because Social Security is broke. I mean, Medicare is broke, which it looks like it's going to be either this year or next year. It's going to run out of money. for every dollar that Medicare spends, they're currently taking in like 15 cents in taxes to cover the outgo. And we're at the end of the line almost on that. Except for one thing, you print money. Now all of a sudden you start printing money instead of taxing the people. You just can't keep taxing people because they're already in, you know, barely hanging on. So that's why I think they're going to revalue gold to back the debt so that it doesn't implode. And it's going to be at a big number, guys, a big number. But in the meantime, you know, you make your money in real estate. That's where I know how to make money. That's the easiest and the safest and the best, and as opposed to the stock market. I mean, you know, something like the stock market is a way more difficult game. I can forecast real estate cycles 10 times better than I can stock cycles. And that's what I do for a living. That's the nature of my newsletter. I track, you know, housing cycles for, I think it's 25, 26 major housing markets in the United States, all based on five key indicators that I showed in my book, Timing the Real Estate Market. It's easy, in fact. Stock market's hard. Stock market's really hard, but real estate's easy. So if you want to get ahead in the world and you're open to different asset classes, my suggestion is go to real estate. Get smart about the cycles. Learn the cycles. Learn how to add value. Learn when to buy, when to sell, when to hold. And if you do all those things, you stand a chance. Because if you don't, you're just going to be, unless you just hit it big in a big, big way, which most people don't, you're going to be working for the rest of your life. And the money you thought you had, you know, gee, I made $1 million in real estate. Yeah, you know, in the last, my profit was $1 million over the course of the last, 35 years. Okay, how much, and of course that's in dollars, which are symbols, nominal dollars. How much in purchasing power, how much did you gain over the last $35? Was it $1 million? No. How much was it? $100,000. Oh, okay. You made $100,000 in purchasing power. You know what, guys? Rarely does that cut it in life, you know? I mean, you don't have to be super rich to be healthy and happy, but you need more than $100,000. So it's a magnificent journey that we're all on, and I really enjoy my role in you know, helping people achieve whatever degree of financial comfort that they can. You know, at least do a few things right as opposed to everything wrong.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you, Jim. We'll catch you in about a month, okay?
You bet.
Bye.
My guest has been Robert Campbell, publisher of the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter. His website, realestatetiming.com. He was speaking to us from San Diego. If you have any questions for Bob or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@housestreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.